Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Tony Bear. In 2016, Tony agreed to be a gestational surrogate for a couple in order to make enough money to pay for her own fertility treatment in hopes of having a baby of her own. She now travels and gives interviews to speak out against surrogacy because of her own deeply personal and harmful experience. Tony's story is complex and painful, and we admire her strength as she shares it with us today. Welcome to Venus Rising, Tony.
Thank you for having me.
I've heard your story a lot, and it's really nice to finally sit down and chat with you. So again, thank you. Before we begin on your surrogacy story, will you tell me a little bit more about yourself and your family?
Okay. I'm 41 now, married. I've been married for over 12 years. We have a two-year-old. She will be two on the 9th of March.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. I have older kids from a previous marriage. I am currently, I don't want to really say where I live.
Definitely.
Just living my dreams. I'm doing something that I've always wanted to do, and just trying to forget what happened in 2016 as much as I can. Now it's more of a along the lines of spreading awareness.
So let's talk about that. What happened in 2016? So that's, from what I understand, where your surrogacy kind of nightmare, I guess, began. You decided to become a surrogate so you could help pay for your own fertility treatments. Do you remember how you found out about surrogacy, or what really kind of drew your eye to that as a means to have a baby with your husband?
Yeah, we had experienced a lot of death. My husband's brother had died. Someone very, very close to me died. It was like we were playing back and forth. Another cousin of his died, and then someone else in my family. It was just horrible.
A lot of loss.
A lot of loss. And we had gotten pregnant before, but it was a tubal pregnancy. I had some issues with my tubes. My tubes were tied. And I just started thinking again how, I don't know, I guess death makes you kind of think about life. And I wanted to try to have a baby. And I figured that the only way that we could was to do IVF. And it just popped in my head, literally. Some things just pop in my head sometimes. And I was just like, you know, it would just be nice if I could have a baby for somebody and they can in return help us with our IVF cycle. Mm-hmm. The only thing I knew about, I didn't really know about surrogacy. I just knew about IVF. I knew how expensive it was. I wasn't really informed about surrogacy or gestational carrier, you know. I was just a spur of the moment thinking.
So I assume you were matched with someone or you found someone. Tell us a little bit about the intended parents. How did you meet them? What was your relationship at first like with them? Tell us more about them if you can.
I found them on Craigslist of all places. At this time, a lot of people would go to Craigslist for a lot of different things. And I actually, we had a business at that time as well. We had an OCD cleaning business, and I did a lot of my advertisements on Craigslist.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, I think that's where how I came across their ad. I didn't necessarily seek out Craigslist, you know, to do this, but there was two ads on Craigslist for surrogates. And I contacted one, and their name were the Montnovers. Sent them an email. She called me, Chantel, their name is Chantel and Paul. And we set up a meeting to go have dinner with them. And we talked. They asked us what we wanted in return. I told them we just wanted one cycle of IVF, and they were like, that's it. We were like, yeah, that's it.
very cheap surrogacy arrangement, one cycle of IVF.
You know, I'm a firm believer in God, and I thought it would just take one chance. You know, I've been pregnant before. I knew what the issue was. I just needed to have the egg in the uterus. So I wasn't really even as educated on IVF you know what I mean? As I should have been thinking that, hey, this could take more than one cycle. It's not always.
Well, to your defense, it's not necessarily portrayed as something that might take more chances, right? Right. Like that's kind of the dirty part, in my opinion, of IVF too, is that mm-hmm. they sell this idea that it is much easier than it is. So, you know, give yourself some credit there. So you met them, seemed like to be a good fit. Did you now, and they agreed to provide the IVF cycle for you. Did you guys use the same clinic? Like, were you using the same clinic that they would use for IVF for their baby? How did all that kind of shake out?
And that was the idea. That was the plan. Because we were going to get a heavy discounted rate by using the same clinic. I try not to think about that. I mean, I've gone through this over and over again back, you know, past all these years, because the rate and the price that they gave us was $13,000. And I've never came across anywhere where it's just $13,000. So I don't want to say that the clinic was on it, but just looking at everything that happened, everything that's occurred, because that was one thing that, you know, we didn't have a contract in the beginning. We were just talking, we were just going to go. And then Chantel said, oh, well, our attorney wants the amount that it's going to be for the IVF in the contract. They want it to be the exact amount and not just one cycle of IVF. So they didn't just want to put one cycle IVF. They wanted a figure in the contract, and that clinic said $13,000. So that's where the $13,000 came from. I even had asked a doctor when we were, you know, going through the initial consultations and all. I was like, hey, can we just do this all at once? You know, I do my eggs and then we can, you know, put their eggs in and then my eggs in. I said, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to tell the difference. You know, my husband is, you know, he's Native American and white and Hispanic, and I'm a mixture of, you know, African American and some other things. And Chantel and Paul are just a Caucasian couple. So I'm like, it'd be pretty simple to tell which baby, you know. And they're like, no, we can't do that. So I just, there's some things, you know, that's when they go back and say things like, you know, well, we'll get to that. But yeah, they, you know, just.
Yeah. We will. This story just kind of goes from
great
to be so let's keep going. So you had mentioned that you didn't have a contract at first, and then it sounds like you ended up going into a contract. Did you feel protected by that contract? Did you feel that anything could go wrong? Were you worried at all? Like, how are your feelings about that?
No, I wasn't worried at all. Actually, my husband works for a company that we actually would get free legal services, and for many different things, family law, all kinds of different things that we would get. And I didn't feel like we needed to have a contract, because what could go wrong? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm having a baby for a couple and they're paying for our IVF. That's it. What could go wrong? I mean, it's plain as night and day.
Yeah.
I didn't think I needed to have a contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So they agreed to pay you the $13,000 for an IVF cycle. Did they cover any other expenses for you, like medical insurance, gas money, or anything else?
Nope. Because it was, my insurance was covering the pregnancy. They knew that my insurance was going to cover the pregnancy as far as me being pregnant. We didn't really look into that, but it's my body under my insurance. Does that make sense? So that's how I was looking at it. Yeah. So which they should have, now that I know that they should have had paid for insurance for me, but there's a lot of things I didn't know. We didn't ask for any, like, I mean, now, you know, after going through all this, I've gone through and looked at other contracts. And so people have, oh, you get a clothing fee, you get all this. We didn't have any of that. It was just a straight $13,000 for the IVF. That's it.
You just wanted your own chance.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. So did you have any side effects at all from your IVF medications or the transfer procedure? Tell us about that.
Oh my God, the medic. Well, so my husband was giving me the shots. That was something very interesting because I never knew we were doing it right. the progesterone shots were painful.
Yeah, those are painful.
Yeah, those are very painful. And literally the lady, I can't even think of her name, but she literally showed me one time how to do the shots and that was it. As far as any side effects, I'm not sure. I do have some health problems right now. I'm not sure if that's from, you know, the IVF medication or not. You know, I have no idea. I don't know. It's just I've never had any health issues before. So,
and that's largely unknown too. A lot of the research hasn't been done on long-term effects of those medications. So tell me, did you get pregnant right away? How was your embryo transfer procedure?
Besides the fact that the doctor didn't do it, it was the actual lady that did the consultation with us, which was weird, but everything went
Did you know the doctor wasn't going to do it? Did you
know? Nope, I didn't know the doctor was going to. As a matter of fact, it was on Easter Sunday. Yeah, I'll never forget that. Easter was in March that year. And it was Easter Sunday. And no, I didn't know. The plan was to transfer one embryo. We didn't want twins. Chantel had had twins before. And she said that she felt like she never loved them or could love them the same amount. So she didn't want to go through that again. Even though the doctor told her that, you know, well, you guys need to try as many chances as you can, because this could be a, you know, one time thing, you know, try
you
it.
You mean like transfer more than one embryo?
Yeah.
Transfer like one, one shot. Yeah.
Right. Right. Because apparently they have done this before. Now I can't remember how far they've gotten. I don't know if they've gotten to, actually the transfer part, but I do know that they had talked to a couple surrogates before and it didn't flourish for whatever reason. I can only guess, but yeah, besides the doctor not being there, it went pretty smooth, to be honest with you. I remember going back to the hotel and laying flat on my back, and I tell you, Kelly, it felt like I could literally feel them taking.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
you say them. So they did end up doing multiple.
I didn't know that they were going to do into the day of until I'm on the table. Yeah. Oh.
So yeah. They informed you right before your procedure that you would potentially be carrying more than one child.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that was another thing that we had talked about. It's like, okay, you don't want twins. Well, if I get pregnant with twins, I don't believe in abortion. So I'm not going to do an abortion. That's not going to happen. So that's why they were so adamant about just transferring the one up into the day of.
I see.
Literally like, yeah, the last hour.
So then you didn't really get to go through the thought process of the risks of carrying multiples, because that's all of a sudden, you know, that's a high risk pregnancy in and of itself, let alone being a surrogate. So, so you didn't really have time to prepare yourself either for that, you know, that.
Nope. Mm-mm. None of it.
So you say that you went back to your hotel. Explain why were you outside of your hometown?
Yeah.
Why did you go back to a hotel?
Iowa. We were both, my husband and I and the attendant parents were living in the state of Iowa. They were dealing with a clinic already in Illinois and Chicago. Oh. And so we would go back and forth to Chicago.
Why Chicago? Do you know?
It's just guessing after all this has transpired. One of the IVF clinics in Illinois, they go through extensive, all kinds of, I mean, things to make sure that everybody is a fit. I mean, mentally, everything. And I can only imagine that they probably wouldn't have passed with that clinic. I that's the only thing I could think of, because there's
a clinic in Iowa. Sorry.
Yeah. At Iowa City. Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you got pregnant. So you got pregnant on your first try, right?
Yep. First try.
And did you end up, did the multiple embryos?
They put that too and did not know, but both of them took.
Okay.
I didn't know right away. They were saying, oh, it's just one, when they did the first ultrasound. They saw just one. But when I go back and look at the video, even now, I could see both sacs. Probably a week or so after that, I think I started bleeding. It was a subchorionic hemorrhage that I was having. And I called the clinic right away. And they're the same person who transferred the eggs. Oh, it happens all the time. Just lay down, relax, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be okay. She called Chantel. Chantel called me. I said, well, I'll just lay here. It's fine. But then I started bleeding more and I didn't feel comfortable with that. So husband came home and we ended up going to the hospital, went to the hospital ER, and lo and behold, everything's fine. There's a little rip and there's two babies. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I called them as soon as we got in the car. I had the pictures of baby A, baby B, and everything was okay. But the next day I was told that I should not be going to the ER without their permission.
Wait, David, who told you you couldn't go to the ER?
The intended parents told me I shouldn't be going to the ER without their permission, which was, I didn't really receive that very well.
I don't think any woman or man would receive that very well.
Yeah. So things started taking a turn for the worse pretty much right then and there.
Can you expand on that? Can you tell us more about that part? And I know this is the part that's really painful to tell, so take your time, but I want our listeners to really understand the dynamic and the pain that you went through.
Well, yeah, the whole thing was, my husband was my support system. He was supposed to go to the doctor's appointments with me, everything, and they agreed on all of that. They knew at the time I was a blogger for YouTube. They knew I was going to blog this journey that I was on for bringing life in for somebody, and then also my journey of going through the IVF. They knew all of that. When they got confirmation pretty much that I was pregnant, I literally remember Chantel saying, well, that's what we wanted. In the front of the car is me, my husband, and I are sitting in the back. And after that incident with the ER, she just became really nasty. And I tried to figure out why. I know it was Paul's sperm. They had an egg donor. I kind of figured maybe she was feeling some type of way because maybe she just felt like, hey, I really don't have any part. I was just trying to put myself in her shoes as much as I could.
Sure.
And so I would take a little bit of her rudeness and her uncouthness and just her blatantly being rude to me, just because I was trying to understand where she could be coming from. But after they told me, she told me I should not be going to the ER without permission, I kind of was a little standoffish to the point where my conversations was not as like long-winded like they were. Like you would think we were best friends in the beginning.
You lost that sense of like comfort and security. Yeah. And hey, yeah, we're good friends. Now this is turning into business. You're treating me very poorly.
Yeah.
And I'm doing this thing for you too.
This is just business. I'm not sure. Again, I didn't know what she was going through. That was my concern, is what could she be feeling? Because that's how I am. It's okay, what happened? Why is it so different? So I would send daily, hi, how you doing? I'm okay. I'm feeling good. I was very, very sick in the beginning with nausea. I have never in my life experienced nausea like that before, ever. I don't wish that on my worst enemy, but I guess the twin pregnancy, the high HCG levels, they are not kidding, but it was awful. It was awful. And, you know, I'm a cook, so I was cooking a lot. And when I would fill up to it, and just show them pictures of what I was doing. And, you know, she started to come around a little bit. And then I still needed to take the progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
And they were buying that medication. That was one of the things that I talked to them about it. I said, well, I can go to my doctor. If I start going to my doctor, that's when my insurance would kick in. Because we, at this time, was going back and forth to the clinic in Chicago. I said, as long as we're doing that, my insurance is not going to kick in. So you guys are going to have to pay for the medication still. And it was even my idea. I said, hey, if you guys don't want to do this last appointment at the clinic, I can call my doctor, let him know what's going on. And then there you go. That was the plan all along. Well, they said they didn't want to do that again last hour, and that they wanted to go to Chicago. And I told them in Chicago, I said, well, you do know that I can't pay for anything as far as medication goes if I'm not seeing my doctor. They're like, that's fine, that's fine. Well, on a Saturday, the pharmacy called and said, hey, we haven't gotten payment yet, and you're due for more medication. I said, well, I'm going to send the attendant parents text message, and that's all I can do. And so I sent a text message to Paul, and his response to me was, geez, we haven't had one chance to enjoy this pregnancy. I was like, oh, okay, well, I haven't either, I guess. Like, you knew I wasn't going to pay for this medication.
Which is required to maintain your pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that's exactly what I said. I said, you guys know I need this to maintain the pregnancy. If I don't have it, then I don't have it, but I can't pay for it. And that's where it came in. Well, we haven't had a chance to enjoy this pregnancy one bit. This is very early on. And so that kind of threw a whole nother level of, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what's going on, but they paid for the medication. And pretty much after I got the medication that time, that's when I got texts from the attendant father saying that my husband was no longer allowed to go to doctor visits with me. And I told him, I said, if my husband can't go to doctor visits with me, nobody's going to be in the room with me at all.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
So what was their argument for that? Why didn't they want him by your side?
Your guess is as good as mine, Kelly. I don't know.
It was just another way maybe to control the situation or to get to you, I guess. Or
who knows? Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking. And that pretty much was, yeah. That pretty much was the icing on the cake, because I think very shortly after that, Chantel had sent me this long email. I mean, calling me all kinds of different names and saying I was a bad person and I came from a horrible childhood and just all kinds of craziness to the point where I said, you know what? I can't talk to you anymore. This is not your child. And those are the words I said to her. This is not your child. This is Paul's child. So I will be dealing with him. And that's where it kind of, the ish hit the fan, so to speak.
I've heard your story before, Tony, and I know you've said that at a certain point you felt like this couple no longer deserved to have these precious babies that you were carrying. Can you kind of lead us up to that point and what you were feeling?
Oh, yeah. Well, pretty much after that email and that Paul stating that my husband could no longer be in the room with me, that's where pretty much our communication stopped. I thought at that time was maybe I should get an attorney, because I didn't like the way that they were treating me. Because in the email that Chantel did send me, that she did tell me that this was their pregnancy. They basically hired me and they're paying me, and I need to do what the doctor said, that I should be doing everything that they're telling me to do. Something to that effect. I try to block it, but I still have all those. Mm-hmm. I still have them all saved, but I try to block it. We hired you. You should be doing what we say. Basically, I should be like a slave to them. It's how I took it.
Yeah, to be blunt, it sounds like you were property to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So at that point, and then him saying that my husband could no longer be in the rooms with me, I figured that communication wasn't going to get any better, especially after I talked to Paul about Chantel's email. And he didn't see her doing anything wrong. And so I went through our legal services with my husband's job. We found an attorney who basically was on our side as far as, yeah, they're pretty much treating you like the slave. That was his exact words. Don't worry about it. I'm going to contact the attorney and you don't have to worry about talking to them. It's stressful enough. You're pregnant with twins, blah, 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 blah. I went ahead and changed my phone number. I changed my email because they were calling constantly, even after our attorney had contacted their attorney and said, hey, can you stop having them call our client? Let's deal with each other. Let's talk through attorneys. They didn't stop. They kept contacting people in our family. They contacted my sister-in-law and said that we were planning on stealing the babies and selling them on the black market because blue-eyed, blonde-haired babies go for money on the black market than any other baby. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. So then, I mean, the communication stopped with us, but then they started harassing our family. And so it was like a constant battle calling our attorney almost every other day. The stress level was unbelievable. I mean, we followed whenever we would go out to try to eat dinner or anything. We went on holiday one time and someone broke in or tried to break into our house when we were gone. Daniel had to get a second job to help with feeding me because I was eating like crazy once the nausea stopped. And Paul would show up at his job, at his second job, just lurking around. Yeah, it was very stressful. It got to the point where I didn't even feel comfortable going to the grocery store. So I had groceries delivered to my house. I mean, I would have people come and ring my doorbell and run off. It was a nightmare. And so contacting my attorney on an every day, every other day basis, it was very, very stressful. And there was times I would have conversations with them. It's like, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to have me to have, are they wanting me to have a miscarriage? Are they trying to stress me out that much? Then they contacted the clinic and they told all types of stories to the clinic to the point that I didn't feel comfortable going to that clinic for my only shot to have my only IVF. So I told my attorney that. I said, I don't feel like it's fair that now I have to, you know, $13,000 is not going to cut it because I'm not going to be able to get that deal anywhere else. He's like, well, find another place to have your IVF and I will send the numbers to their attorney. So I did that. And that's where that whole, oh, they're trying to extort us for more money came from. No, that's not what happened. What happened is they put the clinic involved in everything that was going on and trying to badmouth me to the point where I no longer felt comfortable going there for my only chance at IVF. Right. Who would?
Right. So like a conflict of interest at that point, right?
Right. Right. So that's where that came from. My attorney, I did send one time a conversation between me and my attorney. I said something I was over it. I can't remember the exact words, but I said, would it be just better off if I have an abortion? And I don't even believe in abortion.
Can you say that again? Because it cut out a little bit and I want to make sure that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was venting to my attorney one time and I said, because there was just so much stuff going on with them. I said, would it be better off if I have an abortion? I just don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand what they want. I don't understand why they're doing this to me. And this was a conversation that was supposed to be between me and my attorney. And he sent that conversation to them. Wow. So, oh yeah, it's bad. But so to make a long story short, finally, we got some peace. They weren't calling because I had to change my number again and I had to change my email again. So they didn't have a way of getting it. I made sure to tell everybody not to pass it out. I only gave it to select people. And we got a couple months of nothing. Like I was able to breathe. I didn't have the stress. And then all of a sudden they got my information again and they started harassing me again. And I called my attorney again and I'm like, they're just, what is, well, and he just kind of turned on us too. It's like, well, I think he was just getting tired of it for the simple fact that we weren't paying him anything. And he kind of took on more than he thought this would be. Because I mean, think about it. You got pretty much as like kids, they're hitting me. Yeah. You know, that's how I felt like this whole thing was with them. And I could tell the frustration that he was having. Because he's like, I don't understand why they want me to be alone either. There's only so much I can do.
you know, you're carrying their child. This is their thing. She's batshit crazy, his words. I don't understand why her husband doesn't put her on a leash, his exact words. But there's nothing else I could do. I've called their attorney, said to stop harassing you. They keep getting your note. I don't know what else to tell you. And I just felt so alone. I felt alone. I didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to our family and everything, we thought maybe they were just trying to get me to have a miscarriage. There's no other way around it.
Yeah.
So after they got my information again, Chantel had, and I'm about 6 months pregnant at this time. Chantel had gotten my email and she CC'd me and she CC'd her attorney and she wrote this long email that, I mean, it was just ridiculous. And after going a couple months without, you know, having to have stress, I kind of said, you know what? I'm fed up with this because obviously nobody's like helping us. So let me reach out to Chantel to see what's going on, what happened. So I called her and I said, Chantel, what happened? I have all this recorded. I said, what happened? Well, you lied. You lied to us from the beginning. I said, what did I lie about? And she just spitting off all this crazy stuff, saying that I had a felony. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have a felony. And it was just crazy stuff that didn't have anything to do with me being pregnant with their twins that they wanted to have, or their one baby that they wanted to have. But now I'm pregnant with twins. Didn't have anything to do with that. It was just some craziness coming out of her mouth and I didn't understand it. And she ended up calling me the N-word. And and she's like, you're not going to get one red cent from us. And at that time, we ended the conversation. I contacted her attorney and I have all this recorded too. And I said, you know, told her what had happened. I said, you know what? I don't even want her there. I don't even know what to tell. I don't even want Paul there. You know what? If we can go in and have the babies and I can bring them to your office, because at this point, after everything that's happened, I don't know how anybody's going to respond being in a hospital room, you know, to get, it's not going to work. Oh, we've gone through this before and there's things that we can do and da 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 da. And, you know, technically I'm not supposed to be talking to you because you have to, you know what? If you want me to get rid of that attorney, I will. I just want this settled because I'm 6 months pregnant. It's not going in reverse. It's coming up pretty soon where I'm going to have these babies and we've got to figure something out. Oh yeah. I'll be happy to mediate. So I sent my, the attorney, I sent him an email firing him and we were supposed to get together and kind of come up with some solution, even talk about maybe funding me for an IVF cycle from somewhere else, mm-hmm. you know. Got off the phone with her. Later on that night, my sister-in-law contacts us, and Paul sent her an email or a message on Facebook calling my husband saying, Daniel's a dirty effing Mexican. We don't want you here. I mean, just going on and on. And at that point, I said, you know what? Because it didn't really hit me from the earlier conversation with Chantel when she called me the N-word. But
then she attacked your family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, you know what? I'm done. I contacted the police department. There was an officer came to my house. I told him everything that was going on. He wrote a report number down. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I said, contract is null and void.
Yeah.
Here's my naivety. I was like, the contract is null and void. I don't want to have anything. I'm keeping the babies, not doing it. My husband, Daniel, was completely against it. I was like, I'm not doing it. I cannot give the babies to a family that is full of hate. Yeah. They knew who we are. They sat across from us before any of this went the way that it did. We had dinner with them, you know, and for them to spew this hate, even after everything they've done, the contacting our family members. And when I say they contacted our family members, they contacted family members of family members who were married to family members. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The following, the trying to break into our house, the constant harassment, even after all of that, But, you know, I still was going to give the babies to them. It's after that they spewed that hate that I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I made the decision at that time. And then unfortunately a week later, I went into labor, preterm labor.
At 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 24 weeks gestation, yeah.
Wow. So tell us about delivering then your twin girls in your preterm labor.
I had to have a C-section, and they were the tiniest little things. I named them Haley and Kaylee. Mm-hmm. And Kaylee passed away 8 days after being born. And I needed to be strong for Haley. And, you know, the crazy thing at that time, even after I went through C-section, even after we were born, my husband and I were fighting tooth and nail because he did not want to keep them. But at this time, we weren't talking. There was no communication at all because now we had police involved. He said, you don't contact them.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. You're back. So you were telling us that you had had the twin girls early and
yep.
that Kaylee had passed away after just a few days of life. And did you...
8 days.
Wow. Did you go into like mom protection mode? Did you bond
immediately
babies that weren't genetically related to you? What was going on in your mind? And I know you had just touched on the fact that, you know, the police were involved. Did the intended parents know you had delivered? I can't imagine the stress that you were going through and then to deliver early, lose a child, all of this. I mean, did you, what was going through your mind? What was happening then?
Yeah. Mommy mode definitely kicked into effect right away. It was no longer, I couldn't think about them. It was more, especially after Kaylee died, I need to make sure Haley, I can't get stressed out. I mean, I know one thing, breast milk is going to be healthier for her. I need to make sure I can produce that milk for her, make sure she survives. Kaylee died on a Thursday. The one thing I would do would go back because I stayed in the hospital. I stayed in the hospital from August 31st all the way into November. And on Thursdays, Kaylee passed away on the Thursdays. On Thursdays, I would stay back in the room for just a couple hours and kind of give that little time for Kaylee. And then I would go and spend the day with Haley. But the rest of the days during the week, I was there from 6 in the morning until late hours, bonding with Haley and, you know, doing the touching and being part of her cares. And Daniel, my husband, he fought me tooth and nail, did not want to keep the babies. It was after Kaylee passed away that he was fighting. He was part of the fight for Haley at that point.
So at first he wasn't on board to
not at all
to potentially keep these girls, and
not at all.
Once Kaylee passed, it kind of clicked for him as far as
not at all, not even after them spewing that hate. He just wanted it to be over. He just want them to let them get their babies and let us be done with them.
So did they know that you had delivered? When did how did things transition?
You know, they knew. They knew. I'm a firm believer that they knew, because you don't go all these months harassing somebody and then stop. You don't go all these months having someone follow and then stop. They actually hired a private investigator. So they definitely knew. They knew. What they did is they wanted to wait to see if the babies were going to be okay before they stepped in.
Yeah.
But they knew. They definitely knew. October 31st, Halloween, was when... Now, let me back up. In between time, I obviously had to start thinking. I'm like, okay, I need to contact somebody because they're going to come eventually. And to, I don't know how it happened, but I found Harold Cassidy's information. He came down to visit us and to see Haley. This is after Kaylee had passed away, and he decided to help us. And Halloween, while I'm in the room with Haley, we get served with papers. It was an emergency ex parte that we needed to be removed from the hospital. I don't know how that could happen, especially since at that time in the state of Iowa, when you have a child, the mother is the mother and the father is the father. I mean, how did they know? How did they
know that these weren't my kids. I mean, how were they able to go into the courtroom? I'm talking about Paul and Chantel, and say anything without there being due process as far as me going to the courtroom and telling my side. And so they were able to get an injunction. It just didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. And at the time, surrogacy was not honored in Iowa, right? It was
There was an exception on the books for surrogates. I was not a surrogate. I was just a gestational carrier. So what was being considered at that time, what we were doing was actually selling a child. And that was considered a Class C felony in the state of Iowa at that time.
Do you know, kind of jumping ahead, did what happened with Haley?
Haley is with Chantel, I believe. Chantel and Paul have since gotten a divorce. I know Chantel there, and I need to say they're older people. And I didn't even really look at their age, you know, because who am I to say how old you could be to have a child? But yeah, they're older. I think she's 60 something. I'm not sure how old she is.
So Haley, you believe, is with a woman who is not her genetic mother and not the woman that birthed her.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Or her genetic father. So I want to kind of jump a little bit to like your advocacy against surrogacy now and talk about that a little bit, because we are running out of time. I could always chat with my guests for so long, but.
And I just want to say, I get so like scattered brain when I talk about the surrogacy and the gestational, the issue that happened with me, because I want people to know how traumatic that was. And so whenever I have to talk about it, it kind of puts me back in that place. And I kind of feel all of the things that I was feeling when I had to go through that. So if I sound scattered brain, I'm so sorry.
No, and it's okay. And I'm at the end of our interview, I'm actually going to give a link for people that they can go through and read your story as well. And we'll also post that on our website so that they can find out more about you and more about your story, so that if there was any part that they maybe were confused on, that it'll be there for them. So thank you for saying that. Some people would argue, I hear this a lot, that you are a grown woman and that you can make fully informed decisions about what you do with your body, and that you should have known what you were getting into when you signed a contract to become a surrogate. What would you say to that argument?
Yeah, I am a full grown adult woman. My body is my body, but I didn't have all of the information that I know now. Let's put aside the issues that my husband and I had with the intended parents. It goes beyond that. Like I've said before, I didn't know that you could die from carrying someone else's child. Pregnancy as a whole is a high risk thing anyway for any woman. But I didn't know that the drugs I was taking, I still don't know what the drugs I was taking can do to my body. But I didn't know that carrying someone else's embryo in my body, that I could have died. I didn't know that. So you're right. I can make a decision, but just like you have on cigarette packages and video games and CDs, there's warning labels. Give women the warnings of things that can happen. And I'm not talking about the fallouts that can happen, because that's a whole different story. I'm just talking about the health aspect now.
Right. Well, and you had mentioned, and we know that you are a woman of color, you're a Black woman, and already in the United States, we have a real issue, right, with disparities with women who are pregnant who are of color. And I just feel like this kind of exacerbates them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you think that regulation is key? I have guests on sometimes who think that we can regulate this industry. Or do you think that the only way to keep women and children safe is to completely get rid of the practice?
Completely get rid of it. It does not matter what regulations are on the books. I mean, look at the laws that were on the books at the time I went through the state of Iowa. Anybody can change whatever they want, whenever they want it. Obviously, it happens all the time. So there's no regulations. Regulations are broken all the time. And even if you have regulations on something, that someone is always going to find some way to get around that. No, it's not going to, it's not, no, that's not going to help it at all.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not going to help it at all.
What about, you know, from where I sit and working in this space, I know that you are not alone in your experience. What would you say to someone who might claim that your tragic story is just a one-off, that this is the exception, this is not the rule?
Oh, that's what I thought too, even going through my experience. I thought the same thing until I'm now sitting in the space that I am sitting in. There's tons of us out there. And the reason why it's more of the happy tales of the rainbows and unicorns, like with the Kardashians and the Andy Cohens and, you know, fill in the blank of ex-celebrity, is because those stories are the ones that are more put to the forefront. Us surrogates, gestational carriers, whenever we have a falling out or if there's an issue, we're always treated like we did something wrong. We're always told to be quiet. We're always told not to say anything because people don't want it known that bad things can happen. People don't want it known that you can die. People don't want it known that, you know, hey, this guy is having 19 surrogates pregnant because he's doing crazy things with babies. People don't want people to know that, hey, this guy who is deaf and 60 living in his parents' basement and only wants boys, they don't want people to know that. Mm-mm. they don't want those facts out there. They just want the Kardashians. They want the Andy Cohens and the Anderson Coopers. And, you know, those are the happy stories.
Yeah. Even in those stories, though, they always cut out the woman, you know, like you see the photo of them, but the woman is just this
it's idea. Like a, yeah, it, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, no, you, nothing to see here, folks. Stork brought us the baby. brought us the baby, you know, yeah.
And she's praised so highly, you know, people say like, oh, what, that's such a gift. But then they completely take her face and her identity away from this situation. I wanted to ask, I'm sorry, I kind of jumped ahead too quick, but did you receive the IVF cycle for your family that you were promised?
We didn't get one red cent, as Chantel said. Let me tell you how God makes miracles happen, though. The reason why I know that we were on the right track with fighting for Haley is because even while we were in the hospital, we were being blessed. We were being blessed on the daily, and we continue to be blessed. Not only was I able to get my tubes untied, that was 10 grand right there. I was able to afford not one, not two, but three IVF cycles. We have since bought a house. We have four vehicles, and all by the grace of God that we continue to be blessed. And that's how I know that this happened only for this reason. Unfortunately, Haley had to be brought into this world. And I know she's going to have issues as far as when she gets older, trying to find out who she is. I'm not sure she's going to be able to find that birth certificate because we have a birth certificate out there with our name on it.
I wanted to ask that. Who do you know who is on Haley's birth certificate?
So we are the ones that are on there with her name, Haley. She's not named Haley anymore. They've completely named her something else. And I don't know if the law in the books in Iowa, Chantel would still have to go through the adoption process. If she did that or not, I'm not sure. I don't know if they got that done in time before they got a divorce. So I don't know.
So when you say we are on the birth certificate, do you mean you and your husband or you and Paul?
Yes. My husband and I, because at that time in the state of Iowa, I was considered the mother because I had her. And because I was married, Daniel was automatically considered the father.
I see. I hear your little one.
Yeah.
Congratulations. By the way.
Thank you.
It's always the joy, right?
Oh, yeah.
If Haley were older or were listening today and older, what would you want to say to her?
Just two words. I'm sorry.
What would you say to people who might be considering using a surrogate to have a child?
Using a surrogate to have a child? Say
you know a friend who can't have their own and they want to purchase a surrogate. What would you tell them?
There's so many babies out there that could be adopted. And if you for one step, so because that goes, I mean, I know a lot of people want to have their biological child, but still there's some people like Chantel who can't produce eggs either, and they get an egg donor. So if you don't think you can love a non-biological child, that's the furthest thing from the truth. Mm-hmm. And I would just, why take the chance? Why take the risk? Why spend the money? There's so many kids out there that need adoption.
And why put the risk on another woman to have life-threatening complications? And also for the child's sake, you know?
Exactly. The one thing that I have in my head is when you go to a doctor's office for your annual or your first initial visit, they always have you fill out your medical history. What are these babies, when they find out that, I mean, what can they put on their medical history if they don't even know where they came from?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to say if you get a donor egg from a woman who's been doing this for years and the baby ends up marrying their own brother? I it's just a lot. It's so much that I did not think about, that I think about constantly. And it just kind of needs to stop. But unfortunately, with New York doing what it just did, it's going to be all bad real soon.
Yeah, real soon. That was really discouraging. I was already devastated about COVID. And then when I found out about New York, I had to be picked up off the floor. So,
it's going to be
Go ahead.
Oh, it's going to be the human trafficking capital of the world. New York's little hub, that's what it's going to be. And it's sad. It's going to be, wow. Yeah, I can't get over that. Especially during a time like COVID. Why would you pass a law like that during this time? Mm-hmm. You know, especially for the people that are the informed, I've been pregnant before. I can do that. $45,000, $50,000. Sure. 9 months and I don't have to keep the baby. I could do that. Yeah. No, it's going to be bad. That's going to be bad. So.
For those listeners who don't know what we're talking about, we were talking about the new law that was passed in New York State to make surrogacy, commercial surrogacy legal. So that passed just
it went into effect Monday. Yeah, last Monday. Yeah. I went to New York in February last year to try to stop that from happening.
Yep. Well, I was there with Jennifer and with Gloria Steinem in December the year prior, trying to get more people to oppose that law. So before we leave today, Tony, I want to ask you one more question. I've asked you what you would say to a couple who is considering hiring a surrogate. What would you say to any listener who might be considering surrogacy as an opportunity to make a little extra money and provide life for another couple? What would you say to her?
Just do your research. I would suggest you go to Stop Surrogacy Now. Look at some of the other websites. Legalize Surrogacy, Why Not, I think it is.
Yeah.
And just look at some of the stories. There are plenty of stories out there of women who thought they wanted to do it for financial gain or just to help them. I shouldn't say financial gain, but to help them with bills, and they ended up paying for it 10 times more because they're left holding the bag a lot of times. You even have some women who have lost their lives. So I would just say, do your research. Anybody can tell you, you know, their bad experience. But when you hear of so many, and when I say you have people who have had babies for their own brothers. You've had, I mean, just all different types of scenarios where it has not gone good. Not to mention, we don't know what these drugs can do to us in the future. We don't know what type of health issues with all these drugs that we're putting in our bodies can do. So that's the only thing I would say is just dig a little bit more. Let's not just look at the happy stories, but look at the bad stories too.
Our time with Tony has come to an end. You can read about Tony's story on legalizesurrogacywhynot.com, and you can join her by signing the Stop Surrogacy Now petition at stopsurrogacynow.com. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for taking the time to meet with me and for sharing your devastating story as a surrogate mother. I know it can't be easy to continue to share such a personal story as often as you do, but we thank you. I'd like to thank each of our listeners, and may you continue to think beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.